Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gannon, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGANT. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGANT. And you can send email messages. And not email messages, but you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGANT. Send some messages to the show at Twitter and at GoForItGANT. And that's at twitter.com. Make sure you go to us on Twitter and make sure you follow us on Twitter. Big show lined up for you today. Expected to be joined by the great Willie Rove, and Willie's going to give us his top five, and we're going to discuss some of the happenings around the National Football League. Also, Cowboys free safety Gerald Sensabaugh will be stopping on by, and he's going to talk about their big game against the Rams and talk about their season to this point. Also, Bo Scaife, tight end for the Cincinnati Bengals. Bo's going to talk about his situation right now. Bo is on IR with a shoulder injury right now. He is rehabbing. It's actually a neck injury. I said shoulder. It is a neck injury. And also, Eagles guard Evan Mathis will stop on by, talk about the Eagles' big win against the Washington Redskins. And also, Oakland A's pitcher Craig Breslow will stop on by, and he's going to discuss his foundation, talk a little World Series, and talk about what's going on with him. Big show lined up for you today. Make sure you listen. Make sure you stick around. And make sure you go to blogtalkradio.com/PGANT. Jeremy, how are you today?
Doing, Paul. I mean, you know, a big Eagles victory has totally shocked the world, I think. Played very well. And then this whole week, it seems like the NFL, they're saving lives in the NFL and they're resurrecting careers.
And resurrecting careers is where we'll start. And that is Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer, the great Carson Palmer, I guess. Carson Palmer traded to the Oakland Raiders for a 2012 first-round draft pick and a conditional 2013 pick. I mean, it could be a first-rounder. It could be a second-rounder. Who knows? But, I mean, that is a lot for Carson Palmer. That is a lot. A lot. A lot. A lot. A lot. For a guy who hasn't played, obviously, the whole year. For a guy that we don't know what we have there with Carson Palmer. I mean, obviously no mini camps, no OTAs, no nothing. I mean, this guy is just coming off the streets. We don't know what kind of shape he's in. There was talk that he would start the game this week, but that has been nixed. And more than likely, he will not be starting. Kyle Bowler will be the starter for the Raiders on Sunday. But you look at this whole situation with Carson Palmer. I mean, you give up all that. You give up all that for Carson Palmer, a guy last year, 26 touchdowns, but 20 interceptions. So as much as he gave, he did take it away. And you look at that whole situation, and I want to applaud somebody here. And a lot of people have ripped this guy. A lot of people have called this guy many names, bad names. But I'm going to call Mike Brown, the great Mike Brown, a genius. Because guess what? He held out. He held out. And, oh, by the way, he held out for a very long time, waited to the trading deadline, and guess what? Somebody came a-knocking, and they came a-knocking with a lot. They came a-knocking with a whole heck of a lot. And guess what Mike Brown did? He opened the door. He took it all in, and Carson Palmer is an Oakland Raider. But I got to give some credit to the one, the only Mike Brown. I mean, give this guy a lot of credit for what he did. He is a genius for this. He stood his ground. And guess what? He seems to have a pretty good quarterback in Andy Dalton. And, oh, by the way, the Cincinnati Bengals are 4-2. And you got to give Mike Brown a lot of credit. This is a team that no one thought would be this good. And again, it's still early. It's only 6 games into the season. But guess what? They are 4-2, and they look like they have a quarterback of the future in Andy Dalton. And guess what? Oh, by the way, they're going to get a first-round draft pick in 2012 and a possible first-round draft pick in 2013. This is good times in Cincinnati, and I got to give all the credit to the one, the only, the genius, Mike Brown. Give him the credit. Jeremy, give Mike Brown the credit.
No, I agree. For the first time in a while, Paul, I hate to be the one to say this, but you're making some sense. You know, I was baffled when I heard that this trade happened, and to be even to say this even more. I mean, listen, Carson Palmer is a good quarterback. I don't think there's any question of that. But at this point in his career, to give up basically a first and a third, or potentially two firsts, I mean, the Raiders. I understand you want to win now, and certainly, you know, I see what their plan was, what they're trying to do. But I agree. I mean, Mike Brown, I think for a guy that sat there and said that you don't even need to offer us anything because we're not trading him, to pull this off, you have to give him the moniker the great Mike Brown, because you can only be great if this is what you can do.
Basically, I mean, you have to give the man a lot of credit. I mean, he held out. He held out. And he got what he wanted. And he got a lot. He got a lot. And let's look at the Raiders now. I mean, you look at it. Jason Campbell's down. He's out for the year. Obviously, you can't move forward with Kyle Bowler as your starting quarterback. So you had to make a move. But was it worth this? And as far as I'm concerned, you giving up possibly 2 first-round draft picks in the next 2 years, you have mortgaged the future on some level. So that tells me that, guess what? You're trying to win now. You're trying to win now. But the reality is, can they win now? Are they good enough to win now? I mean, the Oakland Raiders, yes, they are 4-2. They are 4-2, and they look like a pretty good football team. They definitely look like a pretty good football team. But there's a good possibility they won't even win their division. There is a very good possibility they won't win the division.
Right. I mean,
so I look at it. You mortgage the future for Carson Palmer, a guy that, in my mind, has not been the same since the injury. He has not been the same since that injury against the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoff game. He hasn't been the same guy. And so I don't know how much football he has left in him, but if he does still have a lot of football left in him, he could be ultra-motivated being in a new situation. I mean, that could be the case for him. This is a good guy who could be ultra-motivated now that he's in a new situation. But guess what? They gave up a lot for him. And if you're a Raiders fan, you better hope it works out. You better hope it works out.
Well, what's even – I mean, I got to tell you, Paul, and that's what I said. I would be most concerned – from the Raiders' perspective, and I heard this on ESPN, and I actually thought it was kind of silly to say, which is, you know, when you look at Carson Palmer's age, he's 31, and they're comparing Carson Palmer to Michael Vick's age, is also 31. But they're totally different quarterbacks. B, Michael Vick had 2 years off in the game. And C, I mean, the Eagles didn't give up potentially a first and a third or a first and or two firsts. I mean, I look at this, if you're the Raiders and you really, organization in itself, if you don't get a Super Bowl here, this is a failure. I think clearly, and not only that, if you are now the Bengals, you have a quarterback who obviously looks like he can take you somewhere in his first year, but you really certainly want to look at this deeper and say, you know, now, I mean, they could parlay this into another trade, a big time free agent. This gives them a lot of flexibility.
It does. It does give them a lot of flexibility moving forward, and we shall see what happens. But let's bring in now the one, the only, the great Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
How you doing today?
Doing well. Doing very well.
I hear what you're saying about
Will,
Carson.
Let's get right down to it. Carson Palmer, what do you think of this deal?
Well, I think that they were trying to get Carson in for a while, and I think that means that Carson's going to be there for you know, hopefully 3 or 4 years. You know, he's what, he's 31 years old. You know, and I think they plan on having him there for the next 4 or 5 years. So I think this deal was just not made for this year. It's made for the next 3 or 4 years. You know, I just feel bad for Jason Campbell, because it seemed he was playing pretty good this year and seemed like he had found his niche. And where does that leave him in all this, you know, with them bringing Carson in? I think it leaves him in a situation where they got a lot invested in Carson Palmer, and he's going to have to be their quarterback for the next 4 or 5 years.
Definitely. But how much football do you think he really has left? I mean, last year he didn't look good. And granted, it could have been the situation in Cincinnati. And granted, a change of scenery could really help him. But how much football do you think he has left?
I think he's got some football left. I mean, like you said, granted, he didn't play as well, and it seemed like he tried to play harder, you know, better when those guys weren't in there. I'm talking about Chad and T.O. So I think he has some football left. I will say this, that the system that Saunders and the coach, head coach, run is more complicated probably than what Cincinnati runs, and it's different terminology, so it's going to take them a little while to pick up the terminology and stuff, and they like to move players a lot. You know, they like to change formations, do a lot of movement, you know, after they break the huddle at the line of scrimmage, you know, to give the defense different looks. So it's complicated, you know, as you see what's happening with Chad up in New England. I mean he's still trying to learn everything, and you know, it's a complicated system. So I think the fact that they have this week and then they have a bye, you know, that gives them a couple of weeks to grasp the system more. But it's still going to take some time.
And definitely it's going to take a lot of time for him and the Raiders to get this thing right. But, again, they gave up a lot. And if you're a Raiders fan, hopefully it works out for you. Willie, last week you had the situation, Jim Schwartz, Jim Harbaugh, guys at the end of the game going at it. What's your thought on that whole situation?
Well, you know, obviously, I think that you know, Harbaugh was in the wrong. I mean, you know, you got to show a little more. You know, he's excited, but you know, raising his shirt up and doing all that and running over there. But that's Harbaugh. You know, Harbaugh was that type of player. He was a fiery player. You know, always was. A little high, a little on the edge, you know, in certain situations. So you got to expect that from him. But, you know, he's the head coach now. And, you know, just go over there and shake the guy's hand. And you know, no, don't, you know, he's running over there. And he was excited. But, you know, you got to handle that situation a little bit differently. But both of those guys are fiery guys. So they'll get past that. But, you know, he's doing a hell of a job coaching that 49 team.
And you look at Jim Schwartz, I mean. Go ahead. Well, let me make a point about Jim Schwartz. I mean, the guy does the same type of stuff every week. You see him fist pumping and doing all these other antics. So, I mean, it's kind of the pot calling the kettle black, if you ask me. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, I was going to say that, Willie. I mean, my thing was, I think that the worst part was, you know, Schwartz, it wasn't right, I guess, in a way, what Harbaugh does. But, I mean, in my opinion, when Schwartz does, like, running after the guy, and if you're going to, like, run into him with your chest and you're going to do all that, then I think you have to really ask yourself, you know, I thought it was very immature of a head coach in the NFL to run after another coach when clearly it was just you, and you said that. You know that that's the kind of guy that Harbaugh is known to be throughout the league.
Well, yeah, but if the guy's running, if the guy's patting you and throwing you, hitting you on the back, and you say something to him and he's yelling an obscenity, you know, I mean, he obviously, you know, he was saying a few things that Schwartz didn't like, and that's why that's part of the reason he ran after him, because I think he, you know, supposedly he yelled an obscenity out when he was running, and, you know, I mean, it's a tough situation. I mean, they go in there and knock Detroit off, who's undefeated, who've been playing great football, well, been playing a lot of come behind football, and that 49er team, like we said, they have a no die attitude. I mean, they don't feel like they're out of any game. They're gonna battle back. They come back and play and finish the game. I mean, the only game that they let Dallas do that to him, you know, Miles Austin comes back and has three touchdowns, and then that young kid caught that bomb in, you know, in overtime, or they win that game. So other than that, this 49er team is very, very, very resilient team.
And you're looking at that 49er ball club, I mean, they are 5-1, Willie, and I remember you saying earlier in the year that you thought this team could surprise some teams. But I look at them, and I see Alex Smith as their quarterback. And when I see Alex Smith as your starting quarterback, to me, that says that you're not going to go very far. You might make the playoffs because of your division, but I don't think you're going to go any farther than that. You may win a wild card game, but I don't think you'll even win that. I think you'll make the playoffs, and I think that's a byproduct of the division. But when I look at them, I see Alex Smith. Can they overcome that, Willie?
Well, I think as long as Jim Hall keeps coaching them and he doesn't turn the ball over like he's not doing. Alex Smith, top 5 quarterback rating right now? I mean, as long as you keep running the ball and keep him in a good situation and he spreads the ball around, I think he'll be okay. And if they keep winning, you're going to have to play that wild card game. You're going to go up to San Francisco and beat them. That's going to be a tough game. So I agree. I don't agree with you. I don't know how far they'll get, but I think if they get home field in that first round, I think that's going to be a chance for them to win a football game.
Well, Willie, let me say this, because I will say this year it seems like, if anything, with Alex Smith, having Harbaugh as the head coach seems to, for whatever reason, helping his psyche. He doesn't seem to be the same player he was up until now.
He doesn't. It seems like he's playing with a lot more confidence. It seems like they're having a control situation where he's got a couple reads and he knows where he's going with the ball. And he's played pretty good to have, Brayden's out for the year. Crabtree's been in and out the lineup. So, you know, they really haven't gone to Vernon a lot because they've been doubling and tripling team in Vernon. But the other guy's been open. So I think he's done a good job on the circumstances because he doesn't have all his key players. So I think he's done a real good job.
And you look at the 49ers, and like you said, Willie, they easily could be 6-0. After that game with the Cowboys, I mean, they had that football game. So this is a team that easily could be 6-0. Could they get in your top 5, though, Willie?
No, they're
don't
not.
Answer that yet. Don't answer that yet.
All
don't
right.
Answer that yet. Willie, we look at it. Donovan McNabb, another quarterback, he's headed to the bench the third time in 3 years. He hit the bench one time with Philly, came back. He goes to Washington, hits the bench there, and now he's in Minnesota, and he hits the bench again. He says he has a lot of football left, but are Donovan McNabb's days as a starter over, Willie?
He might start again this year for that team. I don't know where he's going to start anywhere else after this year. I don't see where he's going to land unless he's a backup quarterback and somebody gets hurt. I don't see him being a starter in the league other than the situation that happens this year with this team. You know, I just think Donovan's, you know, if you go to Minnesota and you lose your job on that team, I mean, where else are you going to play? You know, I just don't see him being, you know, I would like to see him walk away, maybe play some more this year and go ahead and walk away, unless he wants to be a backup quarterback. I mean, this guy is a Hall of Fame ballot caliber player. So, you know, you don't want to diminish, you know, and people look at what all happened at the end of your career. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but I don't think he needs to be hanging around the league.
But I can say this. Let's say this about McNabb. I mean, like a Kurt Warner, a guy that similar situation in a lot of ways, who was benched in St. Louis. He went to New York. Bench there, Eli Manning eventually took over, and then he goes to Arizona, he goes as a backup, and he proves that he can still play. Matt Leinart gets hurt, and he also proves that he can still play. Could McNabb possibly do it that way? Could he go that route, the Kurt Warner route, and kind of get himself back as a starter?
It's been two teams. I mean, Kurt Warner, a little different situation. He was having some hand issues. he was having some hand issues when he left St. Louis at the end of the, and then in New York he had a couple some hand issues. He was dropping the ball or whatever,
right.
And then he got another chance. Different situation. I don't think different situation. I mean, McNabb's not throwing the ball well at certain times. He's throwing the ball in the dirt. You know, he's not crisp on his throws. I mean, sometimes he throws well. And the other night he was 19 for 24, I think, in the game. You know, he's not stretching the field though.
But
I don't know if he has a receiver to stretch the field to. This is going to be a tougher situation for McNabb. And Kirk did get to Arizona and played great for a few more years, and that solidified him. You know, like you said, it's going to help him when he comes up for the Hall, what he did in Arizona. But I don't think McNabb will get the chance to do what Kurt Warner did, and he'll have to be in the right situation. But he will have to do it trying to be a backup, and then somebody's got to go down and get hurt for him to get
right.
that. So, I mean, it'll be a tough situation. We'll see what happens. But I think at some point you got to walk away. I mean, you get benched 2 years in a row on two different teams.
And that's part, you know, and that's what I agree with. You know, McNabb, I don't think he's playing that poorly. It's just that, you know, McNabb is not playing at the level of a quarterback of his caliber. That's what people have to remember out of him. Now you're getting a journeyman. So, and I think Donovan has to be a lot more realistic. You look at a guy like Mark Brunell, who was able to survive, you know, years in this league as a backup and had found great success as a backup. And so Donovan could really, you know, he could extend his career 5, even 7 years if he goes and walks in a situation and says, look, I mean, I want to maybe stay in Minnesota for, you know, the next 3-5 years and be the backup. But to say you have a lot of miles left and you have a lot of to give the NFL, I mean, I think the last 2 years, then you better start answering, well, what happened there?
Okay, but Mark Brunell left Jacksonville. Mark Brunell took Jacksonville to the AFC Championship. He didn't have the years McNabb had, but he did take them. They knocked Denver off in 1996. Remember, they knocked Denver off when they were 13-3
right.
up in Denver. Okay, Mark Brunell had some great teams, some great years too. But after that, Mark Brunell wasn't playing as much because of his knees or his body or whatever, and he became more of a mentor. I don't see Donovan McNabb wanting to play the mentor role and help. Mark Brunell's more like a coach on the field. You know, he helps the quarterbacks deal with situations. So he's helping. Mark Sanchez right now, and he was helping with Drew Brees in New Orleans when he got a ring as a backup. So I don't see McNabb playing that type of role. And McNabb, we're talking about a guy that was Philly's, you know, franchise player for 10 years. We're talking about a guy that made, you know, Jeremy, you're talking about, you know, 10, 15, whatever. He was making crazy money. So you're going to say he's going to play a backup role and play for $800,000 at the end of his career and stay around for 2 or 3 years, 3 or 4 years playing for the minimum? I mean, we know Mark, you know, situation with some real estate ventures and stuff like that. So I wouldn't think that McNabb would be in the same situation that Mark Brunell is in right now.
And also you look at from McNabb, and if you want to compare McNabb to Brunell, I mean, McNabb put in big time work over the years. I mean, if you want to compare careers, Mark Brunell's career pales in comparison to Donovan McNabb's career. I mean, 5 NFC title games and a Super Bowl appearance. I mean, the guy was one of the better quarterbacks in this era. But I think, and I said I made the comparison to Kurt Warner, but I'm making a comparison on this level. I think he's going to have to go that route. Like, he's going to have to go to a team as a backup, and hopefully maybe he goes and outplays the guy, the quarterback that they have there, or possibly the quarterback gets injured. To me, that's the only way the guy gets a job. I don't see him getting a job any other way. I mean, 2 franchises hand you the keys, and 2 times they take the keys away from you. So to me, I look at this, and I have to say that Donovan is going to have to go the Kurt Warner route and try to become a backup somewhere, and hopefully he can get a shot as a starter, but it's done. He's done.
Yeah, you think it's going to be the fairy tale story of Kurt Warner playing as great as he did for those 3 or 4 years and taking that team to the Super Bowl, and when he was hurt, he wasn't, you know, the team wasn't that good. I mean, Kurt Warner, when he took over in Arizona and really started playing well, he was, you know, one of the premier quarterbacks again in the league, and that team was vital. You know, it still isn't the same without him there. So, I mean, I don't think McNabb's going to be able to play at the level Kurt Warner, even if he got another job. He wouldn't be able to play at the level Kurt Warner was playing at. I don't see that. I don't see that happening. So, you know, I mean, that was a rare case where that did happen for that time period. Even Brett Favre, as good as he is, when he took over in Minnesota, he had one outstanding year, and he played okay with the, he played pretty good with the Jets that 1 year until his shoulder got hurt when the first year he left. But then the next year he didn't play as well, and then he had a great year with Minnesota, and then, you know, it fell apart. Kurt Warner put a stretch of 3 or 4 years where he was playing excellent football, and I don't see Donovan McNabb being able to do that.
And I agree with you, and I think that the second coming of Kurt Warner is the thing that will get him ultimately into the Hall of Fame. I think getting the Cardinals to the Super Bowl is the thing that is going to get him into the Hall of Fame. I really do. Otherwise, I think before Arizona, he was not a Hall of Famer. But after Arizona, I think that will get him in the Hall. But I agree. I mean, Donovan, it's unfortunate. Donovan had a lot of great years in Philadelphia. He's 35 years old at this point. And I think at this point, Donovan may have to get used to a clipboard and a hat. We're talking to Willie Rofe, the great Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler. And Willie, another quarterback change, this time in Washington, Rex Grossman. I mean, sometimes he's good Rex, and sometimes he's bad Rex. And last week, he was bad Rex. 4 interceptions. And Washington decided to make the change and go to John Beck. I mean, I don't know how much better John Beck is going to be. But I think with the Washington Redskins, you cannot afford to have your quarterback throw 4 interceptions and expect to win games. You're just not that good enough. How do you view that move, Willie?
I don't really like the move. I think Rex had a bad game. He did play real bad, though. But I'm glad he did because it cost Jeremy. But I will say that he played bad. Maybe they want to make the move, but we'll see what happens with the other guy. I think he'll be back a starter sooner, but I don't know who they play this week, but they still got a good football team. I mean, you got to win games. They're still right in the hunt, and you make a quarterback change. I mean, Rex has a bad game, but he's been playing good up till now, so we'll see how it works out. But I think Rex will end up getting his job back.
You know,
and they do play the Carolina Panthers, Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers, this week, so we'll see what happens. We'll see how good John Beck is for the Washington Redskins. And Willie,
what are you about to say, Jeremy?
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I kind of agree with you. Do you? I mean, why do this? You know, in terms, this was just a bad game for him, and to make Beck now the starter. I mean, is this obviously then has to be pretty much the end of Grossman, you know, on this team, and then. So for the Redskins, they're looking at theoretically going into the offseason with, you know, a huge need, which is essentially a franchise quarterback, because if Beck doesn't have the kind of, you know, end of a year that he needs to have, where do they go?
Well, it's not the end of the year. It's almost the middle of the year. So I think Rich Carter will be the starter again. I don't know how long this Beck experiment will last. Maybe if Beck doesn't play good, he takes him out during the game and puts Grossman back in. I don't think he'll last that long. I think he'll be back starting in a couple of weeks.
And I think this obviously says that Mike Shanahan is not either very high on Rex or he is very high on John Beck. I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks who throw 4 interceptions a game. Tom Brady, 4 interceptions, and Michael Vick, he threw 4 interceptions in a game, and they still kept their job. So that tells me that, and granted, Rex Grossman is not on the level of Mike Vick and Tom Brady.
Well, and to their credit, those were a lot of tip balls. A lot of those balls that Brady threw were in the hands of the receivers and got tipped up, or, you know, Buffalo made some plays and they were tipped around. Same thing with Michael Vick. Some of those were tip balls, or the receiver should have called them, or whatever. Rex Grossman threw a couple of those passes to that safety right to him. I mean, it was just You know, those balls should not have been thrown. It's a different situation when you got guys around and you're trying to squeeze the ball in there, or the ball's getting tipped and the DB's it's up in the air and the DB's coming over there catching it, and he's throwing the ball right to the safety.
But does that tell you that obviously they're not high on Rex Grossman, and obviously they must think John Beck could actually be the guy? I mean, those two went at it in the preseason for this job, and Rex won out, but obviously they're not very high on Rex because four interceptions, and the team was playing well under Grossman, but four interceptions, and he goes to the bench.
Well, Rex been a little bit of a journeyman too, so, I mean, he's right now Rex is a fill-in. They didn't want to play McNabb. They, you know, it didn't work out for him, and Rex is a fill-in quarterback. So, I mean, I don't think long-term he wasn't going to be the starter there anyway. I think they draft a quarterback after this year and develop him. I think both of these guys aren't their long-term plan. And, you know, it'll be a lot of people in a Luck sweepstakes, but you got some more quarterbacks coming out there to be pretty good. So I don't think either one of those guys with a long-term plan for Washington.
And Willie, we got to get your top five. Last week, Willie, your top five, you had the Packers first, you had the Ravens second, you had the Saints three, you had the Pats four, and you had the Lions five. I'm assuming there's going to be some changes this time around. But, Willie, let's hear it.
There's going to be changes, but it's still the group. Green Bay 1, Baltimore 2, New England 3. Detroit, even with a loss, has moved up to 4.
Wow.
And the Saints, because they got beat, and I will take into account the fact that the head coach, offensive coordinator, that called all the plays, was in the locker room for the second half, and I think that has to do with some of the reason the play called and they lost that game. I have the Saints at 5.
So you got the Saints at 5, the Lions at 4, Patriots at 3, and the Ravens at 2, and the Packers at 1.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now here's a question I have for you. The San Francisco 49ers, 5-1, they go into Detroit and they beat the Lions in Detroit. Somehow, some way, they do not crack your top five. Why?
I'm not sold on them. They go into Detroit and beat Detroit. They're a resilient team. Like you said, Alex Smith, I think Detroit has more talent. I think if they play that game 4 out of 5 times, Detroit wins it. I'm not sold on the 49ers. I think they're going to hit some bumps in the road. But they're playing great football right now. They're a young team. They have a lot of energy. They play hard. I mean, I think they're playing sometimes they finish games. They're playing a little bit above their head. I will say this. I really was impressed with their offensive line. The way they trap blocked and got after Detroit and hit them up the gut on those running plays and the way they mixed up schemes, the coordinator, he did an excellent job. The way they switched it up and were running the ball on Detroit, which a lot of teams have been able to run the ball on Detroit. Even Dallas was running the ball on Detroit. But the way they ran the ball for like 200 yards or whatever they did last week against Detroit, it was very good. And they did an excellent job. And they do it. Their coaching staff is doing an excellent job. So I mean, those are pretty much the same guys they had before. But some of those linemen were rookies, or the big guy from Idaho, the big Samoan kid, and left tackle. So they got some. And that's my line coach, Mike Slaughter, coaching that offensive line. They got some young kids on that offensive line that are playing some pretty good football right now.
And the Lions, they move up one, coming off a loss.
The Lions got a lot of talent. I mean, they just got to put it together. The Lions just aren't, you know, they got one loss. I mean, they got one loss. I can't put them out the top five after one loss to the 49ers. I can't do it.
All right. I mean, you got the Giants there, 4-2, playing some pretty decent football. The Chargers, 4-1, playing some pretty decent football. None of those teams cracked that top five just yet. We shall see what happens moving forward, Willie. And Willie, last week there was a bet on this show. A guy by the name of Jeremy Espy told you that the Washington Redskins would beat the Philadelphia Eagles, the dream team Philadelphia Eagles. And you guys bet a steak dinner.
Yes.
Jeremy, what happened?
Man,
I'll say this, and Will, you said it. The Eagles got lucky. They got three interceptions. I'm not.
They were up 20 at halftime, Jeremy. It was 20-0.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. They were up 21 in week before that. So I'm not sold on an Eagles team that beats a Redskins team that threw that many interceptions and certainly three to one player who has done nothing all season. I'll say this, you know, there's plenty of great steakhouses in the Metro Philadelphia New York area. So I'm a man of my word. You know, whether it be Morton's, Ruth Chris, however we're going to slice this beef, you know, it'll be paid.
Okay, well, you know, it's either Philly or New York. You know, maybe I'll come up to New York. I'll meet you guys in New York, and we'll go up on that. We'll take that up. But I'm just glad I won that game. And you know, Jeremy, I'm not a man that's gonna gloat on you. So I will give you a chance. I'm gonna take my steak dinner, but I will give you a chance to beat me back out of bed on something. I will give you a chance.
That's it's a long season.
Okay.
And Jeremy, I mean, Willie's not a small guy, so that's going to be a pretty expensive steak.
Oh, it's going to be a 30 ounce or whatever, Jeremy. So get ready, it's going to be a nice.
Well, neither is Paul, so I'm well versed on big guys with appetite.
Okay. And Willie, last week you were at the fight, Hopkins, Chad Dawson. You were there, live and living color. You saw it all. What's your thoughts on it? Bernard Hopkins has been restored as the WBC champion by the WBC, and apparently he did have a separated shoulder. But what's your thoughts on that fight?
Yeah,
you paid good money
like
to
separate.
See that fight. Well, what's
I
your
mean,
thoughts?
I mean, Bernard's not boxing, man. Bernard was trying to lead with his head. The boy was tagging Bernard when he got a chance to. Bernard wasn't boxing. He was trying to hit the guy with his head and doing all that antics Bernard Hopkins does, and the guy picked him up and Bernard was, they got caught in an awkward situation. The guy picked him up and put him on his back. He didn't put him on his shoulder. So, I mean, I just that's the problem with boxing right now. You know, Bernard, if he doesn't want to fight, he just needs not to fight. You know, I mean, it didn't look like he was hurt to me. He's acting like his shoulder was hurt, but it wasn't any bruise or anything coming up. Then they put ice on it. So, I mean... I don't think he could have beat that kid if he boxed him, and he wasn't winning the fight. So it's round three or four. So, you know, the guy picked the big Bernard up. I mean, I would have liked to seen him fight more, but the undercards were good. The undercard before that, the young kid was good, and they had some good fights. And Dewey won the fight because the other guy kept spitting his mouthpiece out. So Dewey won, so I was happy to see him win. But that Bernard fight, it's. Bernard, if Bernard can't box anymore, he needs to let it go.
And real quickly, Willie, we had the situation with a Lions running back, Jerome Harrison, discovered that he had a brain tumor, and it would not have been discovered if he was not traded to the Philadelphia Eagles. Have you ever heard of a story like that or seen a situation like that ever during your career?
Never. That's amazing that they discovered that. I mean, that's great for him and his family to find that, and great for that situation to happen. So he did find out he had a brain tumor. I've never heard anything like that. And also, I did go to the barbershop last week and was in there with George Lynch from I love North Carolina. I'm a big North Carolina Tar Heel fan. They played at Flint Hill Preparatory, who came down to Pine Bluff and played in the King Cotton back when I was in high school. I played basketball too. And Jackie Slater were both in the barbershop on Wednesday. So we had some interesting conversation going on in there.
And George Lynch is a Philadelphia 76er. So, I got some fond memories of George Lynch from that 2001 76er ball club.
He's coaching at UC Irvine right now. So he's trying to get into coaching a little bit, but it looks good. It looks like he played a little tight end right now, but he looks good.
And you're a lucky guy, Willie. I mean, I'm a guy at this point who has no hairline, so my haircuts happen in the shower with a razor. So, I mean, good luck to you, that guy like you. You're able to still go to a barbershop and able to get a nice little lineup.
Yeah, I do. I will be able to do that for a while.
Willie, greatly appreciate it, man. As always, let's do it again next week. And we'll see if that top five changes.
It might change. Let's see the games this week. Some teams that are right on the border that are in the top 10. I mean, I will say that you're right. The Giants and the Chargers and the 49ers are right there knocking on the door, but they haven't cracked it. I mean, I can't take Detroit out after one loss, and I can't take the Saints out after what happened to their coach and that coach and that quarterback. Make that team going. He wasn't there for the second half. So I mean, I give Tampa Bay credit, but I can't give him complete credit of what happened.
Willie, greatly appreciate it. And as always, again, let's do it again next week and appreciate it again.
All right, thank you.
The great Willie Rofe, and you know Willie is a big man, and you know I would hate. To have to buy a steak for a man that size. I mean, I would hate to have to buy a steak for that man. That is going to cost you. That is going to cost you. You're talking Morton's, Ruth Chris, and you're talking New York City. You're talking a lot of money. You're talking a whole heck of a lot of money. Jeremy, I hope you are ready.
Well, you know, that's why you go to work every day. We don't worry about that. You know, we don't worry about that here in the manor, Paul. We handle our debts, and you know, we act like men. We don't worry about the size of the bill. If we make a bet, we're going to pay that.
Kudos to you for being the man that you are and willing to pay the bet. I mean, you got to pay the man. Pay the man, as they say sometimes. And Jeremy Willie Rofe again, get ready. That's a big man. 20, 30-pound steak, he'll take care of that in one sitting, and that's going to cost you a whole heck of a lot of money, a whole heck of a lot of money. But again, you go to work every day, and that's why you go to work every day to pay those particular bills. And I want to go back now to the Jerome Harrison situation. I mean, he was traded this week from the Detroit Lions to the Philadelphia Eagles, but the trade was voided after the Philadelphia Eagles discovered a brain tumor in his brain, obviously, and you look at it, and this whole situation may have saved this man's life. I mean, being traded may have saved his life, and he has been complaining of headaches, and there was even talk that the guy was walking around with sunglasses because of it. So, you know, it's a blessing in disguise, I guess, in a lot of ways. I mean, it's, you get traded, and you realize during the trade that you have a tumor. I mean, this trade essentially saved this man's life. This trade essentially saved his life. That's big. That's a big situation. That's a big situation. And anybody that tells me that there is not a God, I mean, after this situation, you have to believe that there is some type of God somewhere, because that situation, I mean, you look at it, the guy gets traded. He would have never would have known that he had a tumor. Never would have known. And guess what? The trade happened, and the guy finds out he has a tumor. He gets the surgery, and right now he's in good spirits, and hopefully he can make a full recovery. I mean, that's a crazy situation. Ronnie Brown returns to the Philadelphia Eagles, as Harrison was traded for Ronnie Brown, but again, the trade is voided. Harrison goes back to Detroit. Brown goes to the Philadelphia Eagles, goes back to the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, that's an interesting story, Jeremy.
No, I mean, more than interesting, it's certainly, like Willie said, that's something you don't hear about. I've never heard about that. And certainly, I mean, if you're sitting in his shoes, you have to feel like you're lucky to be alive, literally. And they say that, you know, they expect him to make a completely full recovery. And, no, and certainly that, you know, that was once in a lifetime, things like that can happen. That's a game changer right there.
That truly is a game. That's a life changer. You know, that's a life-changing situation. But, again, we wish James Harrison nothing but the best of luck, and we hope he has a speedy recovery. I said James, Jerome Harrison. We hope he has a speedy recovery, and we wish him nothing but the best of luck moving forward. And you know, it's another interesting week in the NFL, and every week in the NFL is an interesting week, and the crowd is going crazy. And that could mean only one thing. It's Tim Tebow time. Tim Tebow will get to start for the Denver Broncos as they go to Miami to play the Miami Dolphins. And Tim Tebow is a starter. Everybody's called for it in Denver. You had the whole whole fan base in Denver screaming and clamoring for this guy. They finally got him. He is a starter. But all I have to say is this. There's an old adage in life. Be careful what you wish for. Be careful for what you wish for, because you wished for Tim Tebow to be your starter. And guess what, my friends? Tim Tebow is not an NFL caliber quarterback. I said this during the summer. I would let this man marry my daughter. This man is a great leader. He's a great guy. But guess what? He's just not an NFL quarterback. I don't see it. He's not the best quarterback on his roster. I don't see it. But it's a great story. It's a feel-good story. And you kind of hope it does work out for the guy because he is such a good guy. You're rooting for the guy because he is such a good guy. But at the end of the day, I just don't see it. I don't see it. I don't believe it. But only time will tell. Only time will tell what happens with Tim Tebow.
Well, Paul, I mean, you agree that at some point this organization, this is what they had to do. They can no longer. How much longer can they let him, you know, sit there in basically in purgatory? You know, is he going to be an NFL quarterback or is he not? So it had to come to pass. And given the fact that this season unfortunately had, you know, turns out this way, it was, and it really is for him, his opportunity. So, I mean, you know, it is now really up to him what he can do with this. I mean, I look at it and I say, why not? We talked about this last week, and I certainly said last week, and I'll contend this week, you have to do this if you're the Broncos as part of, like, the due diligence.
You definitely do, because at the end of the day, you're not going anywhere. So you have to make a change, and why not give it a shot? I mean, it's going to sell jerseys, and why not give it a shot? You never know what could happen. Let's bring in now the safety for the Dallas Cowboys, Gerald Sensabaugh. Gerald, how are you, sir?
Doing fine. How are you guys?
Doing well. Doing very well. Gerald, let's get right down to it. I mean, you guys going to Foxborough last week. You played the Patriots tough. Ultimately, you lost. In the NFL, obviously, Gerald, there are no moral victories. But you guys got to feel good about this one. You got to take some positives from this game, correct?
You know, we did some good things, but at the end of the day, we didn't close out the game. And, you know, we have to work on just closing out games and just making plays and crucial points of the game. You know, we just got to find a way to come out with that win last week. But, you know, like you said, there is no moral victory. But, you know, guys did play well, and there's a lot of things we needed to work on, too, at the same time. But, you know, our staff did a great job of correcting things, and we're looking forward to this week coming up forward against the Rams.
And, Gerald, I look at your team, and your team, to me, a lot like the Philadelphia Eagles, two teams very talented, but two teams that gave away some football games here early on. You look at it, you guys could easily be 4-1. When you look at that whole thing, does that kind of frustrate you?
You know, it is frustrating, but you know, at the end of the day, though, we are what we've done, and we've earned our record, whatever it is. It's 2-3, and we have to find, like I said, we have to find ways to win those ball games. We know we're a better team than a 2-3 team. You know, we're rolling right now. We have some good things. We have a lot of good things going on. We just have to put the pieces of the puzzle together and just come out with complete games. You know, we've lost our games. I believe they were all around 4 points or 4 points. You know, we've always been there at the end of the games, right there. It's just a play. We're just two plays away from winning those ball games. So we could easily be 5-0 if we're looking at it that way. But, you know, we just got to find a way to win these games.
Gerald, it seems, you know, it seems like you're paying little attention to the 2-3 record. As you said, if you close the games out, your record is substantially better. Is the feeling in the locker room that it does come down to the fourth quarter for you guys and recognizing that the game is going to be won and lost in all four quarters, but certainly take control and retain control in that fourth quarter.
Say one more time. I didn't quite understand. Say one more time.
Closing out these games, is it certainly now for you guys and on the defense as well as the offense, closing out games, making sure that you don't lose these games in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, you know, it's on the same. You know, it comes down to situational football. And those are the crucial situations in the game. You know, like I could say the fourth quarter, that's big. You want to win the fourth quarter. You want to win the turnover ratio. You know, there's just certain plays, there's crucial points in the game you have to come away with a play. And we've been on the short end of the stick a couple of games, and we just have to, like I said, we have to find a way to win those games. But, you know, we have a great team. Guys are playing well. You know, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. We have 16 chances to prove ourselves that we're a playoff-caliber team. And, you know, we have three losses early, but we can easily get on a roll here and run off a bunch of straight wins. And that's what we're looking forward to, and hopefully we can start off good this weekend.
And you look at your team, Gerald, you have defensive coordinator Rob Ryan. I mean, last week he devised a great game plan against Brady. Ryan, he's confident, he's brash. How is it playing for Rob Ryan?
Oh, it's awesome playing for him. You know, he's always going to have the energy high. You know, the one crazy thing about him is he dials up teams where he knows exactly what's coming, and he puts us in positions to make plays. And that's why you don't see too many big plays calling us, because we pretty much know everything that's coming at us. You know, sometimes it's a little wrinkle here and there, but he does a good job of putting the team in position to make plays at all times. And he's a great guy to play for. He's real comical. He's real loose in the meeting rooms and stuff. And guys have a good time, and guys really enjoy playing for him. And, you know, like I say, he's bringing the best out of all our players.
We're talking to Cowboys safety Gerald Sensabaugh. And Gerald, you look at it right now, you're off to a pretty decent start so far. You got an interception, you're second on the team in tackles. Talk about your play thus far this season.
You know, I'm just trying to do my job and just make sure I play consistent. And, you know, that's big, just making sure I make those tackles. Just play consistently great high. And that's what's just one of my goals that I'm set for. And, you know, and Rob puts me in a lot of positions where I'm able to make plays and maybe take people out of the game at times. And, you know, I'm just going to embrace my role. And it's just a great team to play for. I have a lot of guys, you know, the front seven is doing a heck of a job up there, making our jobs a lot easier on the back end. You know, all these sacks they're getting. I believe we lead the league in sacks right now. What's crazy is that you have multiple guys getting sacks just from all over the place, from defensive backs to, you know, just everybody's getting sacks in this defense. And, you know, it makes it a lot easier on the covering side, on the back end, and we're taking advantage of that. But like I love playing for this guy. He's fun to play for. You know, like I said, we have a good time. We really have a good time back there.
And Gerald, talk about this week's game. You know, in comparison to next week, much hype against the Eagles, but certainly, you know, inside the locker room, not trying to overlook, you know, this weekend against the Rams.
You can't overlook this team. You know, they have a good team. You know, they have some good players. You know, Steven Jackson's rolling. You know, I'm not sure if the quarterback's going to play or not, but, you know, they brought in Lloyd. You know, he's a big play receiver. He has great hands, and everybody uses his body well. I mean, every week's a challenge. I mean, I know they're 0-5 team, but at the same time, you know, you have to bring your A game every week. And we have respect for these guys when they go out here and just execute the game plan. But we know the challenge that we have facing us this Sunday, and we just have to go out there and come out with a win. But, you know, they do have a good team. They do have a lot of players that's playing pretty good right now. And we just have to go out there and just do what we do.
And hopefully you guys will pull it out this week against the Rams. And, Gerald, you look at it, much has been made of Tony Romo. You had Deion Sanders calling him out. But as a team, do you guys still believe in Romo?
Yeah, we believe in Romo. He's an awesome quarterback. You know, I mean, he's leading one of the high-powered offenses in the league right now. You know? You guys, I don't know where all the criticism comes from, but, you know, everybody makes mistakes sometimes, but at the end of the day, you stand behind your teammates, and, you know, he's led us to many victories, many comeback victories. We let some slip away. It's not all his fault. You know, the defense let one give away, and, you know, we just have to come together as a team, and we just have to win these games. But, like I say, Romo, he's a good quarterback. I'm a win trainer for anybody, and I'm just glad that he's the quarterback on my team.
And I believe in Tony Romo personally. I still think that he's still a very good quarterback, and you know, hopefully he can clean up those situations in the fourth quarter. He does that, you guys are in a very good situation. And, Gerald, you're a guy off the field. You have a passion for fishing, and you shared that passion during your bye week with some local Dallas area students. Talk about that.
I was fun. I got together with Big Thought, and they wanted to do something just showing just outside things that impact my life and how they impact. And, you know, I just talked about my fishing. You know, fishing kind of teaches you patience and dealing with adversity. You know, nothing's worse than when you have that big one on the line and then it breaks off as soon as you get it to the boat. But, you know, I just had, got a chance to bring some of my favorite lures to the kids and read them a book, and hopefully they can take on fishing in their spare time.
And what's the biggest fish you ever caught?
I've caught like a marlin before. I've had one of the I've had a huge shark before. It's probably like 10, 11 foot. But by the time it got to the boat, it broke off. So, but actually, the biggest one I probably caught was a blue marlin. It was pretty big. It was probably about 6 feet long, 6, 7 feet long. So it was pretty cool.
Oh wow! Oh wow! That is big. That's very big.
We have a friend that goes fishing. I guess you go for those marlins. You're down in the Keys in the Florida area.
Sometimes on the coast, but I really like to do freshwater fishing. I try to take up bass fishing. That's pretty much what I really like to do the most is bass fishing, and pretty interesting. I got a chance to during the lockout go fishing with a 2011 Bassmaster Rookie of the Year. His name is Todd Defoe. And I got to go out there with him and fish with him a little bit and see some of his techniques, and I see why they call me an amateur and he's a professional. But, you know, the techniques that he's able to use and the stuff that he's able to cast into, it was ridiculous how he was getting in the stuff and pulling fish out every time, and it's pretty awesome. It's a great experience.
And do you eat the fish that you catch?
Not really. I try to catch and release. You know, I just do it more for the sport, the fun, and you know, just get the family out to do stuff. And I don't really too much do the cleaning thing and keep them. I like to catch and release and catch them again, catch them 2 years later.
and Gerald, I mean, don't take away my man card here, but I don't do well with debate. I really don't do well with debate.
Oh, man, come on.
Is my man card still secure?
Oh, man, I don't know about that one. So you tell me, if you caught a fish, you have to get somebody to take it off for you?
I got to get somebody to take it off, yeah.
I don't know about that one. I'll leave that up to the critics.
And, Gerald, where can fans connect with you?
You know, I have a Twitter page, G Sensabaugh. I do a lot of Twitter. I have an internet site, gsensabaugh.com. I do a lot of giveaways and try to give away tickets to games. And I've been trying to give away all my game cleats this year. Usually I warm up in a pair, and during pregame warm-ups, I warm up in a pair of gloves, and I'll find a little kid in a Cowboys jersey, and I usually give him my gloves during warm-ups. And also every pair of game cleats I wear this year, I've been doing little giveaways and contests to give those out and just trying to interact with the fans and have a good time. Let the fans know a little bit about me off the field and at the same time have a good time on the field.
And where can fans go again? Give the website again.
It's gsensabaugh.com.
Okay. So fans, make sure you go to gsensabaugh.com, and it's an opportunity to win some cleats and some gloves and some other great things. Make sure you connect with Gerald there at gsensabaugh.com. And Gerald, I had the Dallas Cowboys making the playoffs before the start of the season. All I can say to you is, Gerald, don't let me down.
Oh, we'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get there. I promise you, we by the end of this regular season, we're going to have one of the better teams in the NFL.
You promise or you guarantee?
I'm telling you right now, man, we're a player or two away from being great. We're a player or two away every game from being great. And
I agree with you. I mean, I think the Cowboys are there.
Yeah, we're there. I mean, our record doesn't say right now, but you know, we're there. Just trust me. We'll get on this roll here soon.
Trust him, but
we'll get on this roll here immediately. Actually, and you guys will have a whole different aspect of it.
And hopefully it gets started this week against the St. Louis Rams. Again, everybody, make sure you go to gsensible.com. There you can connect with Gerald Sensible. Gerald, it was a pleasure having you, sir. We wish you nothing but the best of luck moving forward throughout this season. Hopefully you make the playoffs, as my prediction states. And also, Gerald, let's do this again.
All right, thanks for having me on anytime.
All right. Gerald Sensible, safety for the Dallas Cowboys. I tried to get him to get Gerald gave me a promise that the Cowboys would make the playoffs, and I'm going to take him on that promise. And I said in the interview, I do view the Cowboys a lot like the Eagles, two teams that are very talented, two teams that, like you said, are a couple plays away from being where they need to be. And I look at the Cowboys, there's a lot of talent there defensively. They're stopping the run. They're number one against the run. Romo, I still believe in Tony. I know a lot of people don't, but I still believe in Tony. I still think he can get it done. And I think the team still believes in him. And I think this is a team that will still make the playoffs, but as a wild card. Maybe they make the playoffs as a wild card. Maybe. But we shall see. The second hour of Go For It starts right now. Right now, and during this second hour, we're going to be joined by Bengals tight end Bo Scaife and also Evan Mathis of the Philadelphia Eagles and pitcher for the Oakland A's, Craig Breslow. So we got a jam-packed second hour of Go For It, and hopefully you're going to stick around and listen to the second hour of Go For It. It's been a good show so far, Jeremy. Lots of fun.
No, it certainly has an interesting. We'll certainly get Bo Scaife's take on the recent developments and a season here not terribly unsuccessful or successful for the Bengals. And as we talked about in the beginning of the show, it for them this could be a game changer. Where in the beginning of the season, it certainly looked like it was going to be. Looming over their head, and as you proclaim him to be, the great Mike Brown, comes away with potentially two first-round picks or a first and a third and really could and can, you know, propel this team now. I mean, they have certainly, it appears to be a quarterback of the future, and they have a lot of young pieces. They have great young receiving core, and they have arguably a pretty good defense.
And Bo right now, he is on injured reserve with a shoulder injury. And right now he's rehabbing to trying to get himself back for the next season. But again, the Bengals are a team right now that are playing some good football, playing some great football. And
well,
I said shoulder, it's actually a neck injury. And again, they're playing some great football, not great, but they're playing some good football right now.
And that's Paul. Like you, I will say you said it was funny, and potentially I would hope jokingly to call, you know, Mike Brown the great Mike Brown. But this was a very, you know.
No. He is the great Mike Brown.
I mean, will you agree? I mean, to come away with it, in my opinion, the Bengals walk away. This was beyond a coup for them. I think for anybody to think. Even before the season started, that they were going to get a first rounder for Carson Palmer, I think people—I don't know—I was shocked. I would have been shocked to hear that before even seeing this trade. You agree or disagree?
I mean, yes, obviously I would be shocked, and that's why I give Mike Brown the credit that I give him. I mean, Mike Brown is a genius. He waited, and they always say in life, patience is a virtue. Mike Brown was patient. He waited. Waited out, and guess what? He got what he wanted. And that, to me, is a beautiful, beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing if you're a Cincinnati Bengals fan. Mike Brown deserves a lot of credit.
Well, I mean, I think beyond the credit. I mean, he did what was best for this team. I mean, he certainly recognized that there's a lot of young talent on this team, and the best way to build on that young talent was and certainly is to continue to cultivate it. And so rather than sit around and, you know, pretty much just have a player sitting, you know, out there in purgatory doing nothing with his career, nothing to help his organization. Who knows, you know, how this came to be, but, you know, from a guy who sits there and says they're not going to trade him to doing that deal, he helped himself, I think, you know, 50-fold, and I believe that. I think he really did a very good job of, you know, making sure his organization, putting his organization in a position to win, and putting the team first and his grudge or his anger second.
And you got to give Mike Brown a lot of credit. The man is a genius. He is a genius. Give him credit. Let's bring in now the tight end for the Cincinnati Bengals, Mr. Bo Scaife. Bo, how are you?
What's going on with y'all?
Not too much. Good to have you on.
Hey, man, thank you for having me.
And Bo, let's look at it right now. I mean, you're out for the season. I mean, you hurt your neck in the preseason. Take us through the play that you got injured on.
Oh, man, I'm just, you know, the routine run play, man. You know, I guess maybe I hit the guy wrong or something like that, and it was all she wrote, you know, just how it goes. You know, you live each play, you know, like I said, your last, and you never know. So, you know, just unfortunate, but, you know, we got a lot of football left, though.
And how's the rehab going to this point?
Oh, I feel good, man. You know, like, you know, most guys say, you know, small thing to a giant. So, you know, injuries are a part of the game, and, you know, you got to take it, you know, for what it is. And, you know, if you want to play, you continue to, you know, work hard and, you know, get back to where you need to be.
And you look at it right now. So this is not a career-threatening injury?
Oh, no. You know, me and Peyton, we kind of got the same thing. So I know if he's going to be back, Bo Scaife's going to be back for sure.
And now, are you getting the same type of treatment that Manning is getting? I know he's getting some different type of treatments.
Well, he had a couple extra surgeries. See, I went and got mine and knocked it out, you know, one and done. So I might be a little ahead of him right now, but you know, I just had one small surgery in LA, you know, by the best doctor, you know, for the neck as far as that's concerned. His name is Dr. Watkins. So, you know, he fixes up all the athletes around the world. So I put all my trust in him, and, you know, he got me feeling pretty good so far.
And was it devastating for you? I mean, being that you were going to miss the whole season, how devastating was that for you?
You know, I'm a little older now, so I can't say it was devastating, but, you know, it definitely hurts. You know, it's hard to, you know, when something that you do so well and, you know, so much a part of your life is taken away from you. I haven't missed a season since I was, like, 21 years old, so it's been about almost 10 years. So that's a little different, you know, and it's hard to watch, but, you know, you're older, you handle it, you know, a little more maturely than, you know, some of the younger guys, and, you know, you just know what you got to do to get back.
So, and with this being a neck injury, you certainly mentioned Peyton Manning. How do you see your comeback in terms of, you know, getting out there? And certainly rehab is one thing, but getting hit and the physical proponent of the NFL, how are you preparing for the mental part of the comeback?
Well, you know, they say when you get it done, it's supposed to be stronger than it was in the beginning. That's what they say with all these new surgeries now. You know, you're stronger than you were before. So, you know, you got to just have, you know, faith and all that, and, you know, and the doctors. And if they tell you you're good to go, you got to just believe in that. You know, football's definitely a sport where, you know, you can't be hesitant and timid. So you can't go out there thinking about all that. So I don't think I'm really going to have to worry about, you know, overcoming, like, the mental part. You know, I'm just going to be excited to get back out there and, you know, being away for so long, is you just can't wait to get back out there with the fellas.
We're talking to Bengals tight end Bo Scaife. And speaking of the fellas, have you been hanging out the hanging around the facilities at all, or are you kind of off to yourself?
I've been, you know, kind of like, you know, off to myself, home with my family because, you know, I went out to have surgery in L.A. But I've been talking to the fellas on a regular basis. You know, I communicate with the coaches and the training staff. So, you know, I'm well in the link. You know, I'm proud of them. They're doing a good job and, you know, exceeding all the expectations from the outside. So, you know, it's good to see the success that they're having, and I hope they just keep on doing it.
And did you see the potential in this ball club when you signed with them in the offseason, knowing that Carson Palmer probably wasn't going to be there?
Oh, yeah, I definitely saw some potential. But you know how the NFL is. You know, you got to go out there and play. You know, everyone thought the Eagles was going to be this and that, but, you know, everything's settled on the field. So, you know, no matter what you see out there at practice, you know, it has to transfer over to the game. And, you know, some teams do it, some teams don't. But I'm glad to see that, you know, the team is, you know, coming along and, you know, they got a good start.
A very good start off to a 4-2 start, a surprising 4-2 start. And one of the reasons for that is quarterback Andy Dalton. In the preseason and during training camp, did you see the potential in this guy?
I think the big thing with Andy was, you know, when he got there, they, you know, he knew he was going to be the man, and, you know, the whole coaching staff was behind him. So, you know, he had that comfort where he wasn't worried about going out there and messing up. You know, mistakes at the quarterback position are part of the game, especially, you know, being a rookie. So, you know, he had that, you know, room to, you know, for error, and he had a good supporting cast. So, you know, everyone was, you know, on his side and behind his back, so I think it made his job a little easier and took some pressure off him.
That it did, and Cincinnati Bengals, I mean, the defense is playing well. I mean, a lot of people are playing well for this ball club. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, we were talking right before you came on, and certainly big news recently was the trade of Carson Palmer. Number one, your take on it, and you know, number two, how do you think this certainly is going to help the Bengals in the coming seasons?
I just think this is something that, you know, they probably wanted to get put behind them. You know, it was just kind of hanging over their head and stuff like that. So, you know, as far as the front office was concerned, I know they wanted to get that behind them. And, you know, whatever was going to happen with that situation, you know, let it happen. So, you know, the results came out to be very, very beneficial for them. So I'm sure they're happy with it. And they'll have some great players, you know, in the future because of it.
And yeah, two first rounders or two possible first rounders. I mean,
right.
You got to get something out of that. And Bo, you spent many years with the Tennessee Titans. They franchised you the last two seasons. Is there any ill will towards that organization?
You can't really have any ill will toward the organization. You know, the last year I was there, you know, we had a real up and down season. A lot of stuff was going on inside. So, you know, it's just a business, and, you know, you got to be thankful for the opportunity. You know, a lot of guys don't get to play their whole, you know, first 6 years with one team, so I'm definitely very, very thankful for that. So, you know, no ill will. They definitely, you know, being there for 6 years made me a better player, and, you know I got many years to come, you know, for whoever it is with.
And real quickly with that situation, how much did the whole Jeff Fisher, Vince Young situation affect the ball club?
You know, I think, you know, regardless of what people say, you know, it didn't affect it. You know, I'm sure it kind of, you know, it did to a certain extent. You know, guys, you know, were torn, you know, in the locker room with the whole situation. But, you know, both sides definitely could have handled it better. You know, the team could have handled it better. And, you know, if we would have got past that, you know, we would definitely would have had a more successful season. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, everyone learned from it. And, you know, hopefully, you know, teams that, you know, come in that situation again will handle it better than we did.
And, you know, right now you guys, the Bengals, are 4-2. Do you still feel like a part of the team being that you're away from it? I mean, is it difficult for you to still feel part of the team?
I can't even put into words how difficult it is, man. You know, you just want to be out there so bad. You know, like I said earlier, you know, when someone takes away something you've been doing your whole life, you know, it's very, very hard to accept and deal with. But, you know, I'm trying to be there as much in spirit. You know, I got to take care of Bo right now and, you know, get myself healthy. And that's the best thing I could do to help that team is to get myself back and, you know, try to contribute next year. So, you know, that's all I'm doing. And, you know, all my best wishes for them, and, you know, I hope they're successful.
And this being your first year there and with this injury, you know, and I think you made a good point. You have to get your neck right and get back. But seeing the success of this team this year, what does that mean then for Bo and coming back into the team?
That means I can only, you know, all I could do is, you know, contribute and make the team, you know, a little more successful than they were. You know, I got a lot of talent, I feel like, and I feel like I got a lot of offer. So, you know, if we had that little addition of Bo's Scape, I think it can just only be beneficial for both parties. So, you know, I'm excited and I'm doing everything I can to get back. And, you know, whether I'm with the Bengals or whoever next year, you know, someone's going to be upgraded.
And, Bo, on this show, we like to play a game called Who's Better. I'll give you two topics. You tell me who's better. You ready to play?
Sure.
Better Bo, Scape or Jackson?
Oh, man, it got to be Bo Jackson, man. That's like, you know, my parents, they kind of named me after Bo a little bit. So, you know, he was doing a whole lot back then, and I looked up to him a lot. So, you know, I got a lot of love and respect for Bo Jackson. I met him a couple times, too.
Better rapper, Jay-Z or Lil Wayne?
You know, personally, I just like, you know, I like Lil Wayne right now, man. He just, you know, he's hot. He's on everybody's stuff. So, you know, I'm a Lil Wayne fan.
All right. Better city, Denver or Nashville, Tennessee?
I think Denver is a better city than Nashville. You're trying to get me in trouble with nobody, man, for saying all this stuff. But, yeah, I think Denver's a better city. No offense to Nashville. I like Nashville, too. But, you know, Denver's definitely a nicer city.
And you were born in Denver, you know, so
right.
that's understandable.
I mean,
that's very that's very understandable. And last question, Smoover operator, Barry White or Bo Scape?
Well, you know, Barry White, he kind of got that old school stuff, so that stuff might not work now. So I would have to say definitely Bo Scape. You know, I'm a little caught up, you know, what's going on in this new generation. And, you know, I've adapted and unable to change. I'm like a chameleon, so I got to say Bo Scape. But if it's Barry White, you know, without the singing, definitely.
Bo, we greatly appreciate it, man. Thank you for stopping by. Get healthy. Get right, and hopefully you'll have a successful 2012 season. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it, man. Check me out.
All right. And how can the fans connect with you?
Hey, man, just look out for me. That's all I want them to do. You know, I don't do none of the Facebook and Twitter stuff, man. That's kind of dangerous. So just look out for Bo. And when I hit the surface again, I'm going to hit it running.
All right. I got to take your word for it, and I believe you. You sound very confident in your abilities. And, again, we wish you nothing but success moving forward. And let's do this again.
All right, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Bo Scape, tight end for the Cincinnati Bengals. And it's got to be tough for Bo Scape. I mean, neck injury, out for the season. The team is doing well. And Bo Scape, he's a pretty good tight end in this league. Confident guy, and when he says he's going to come back, I believe it. You believe him?
Well, I mean, no, I mean, absolutely. He's certainly he had a good career, and I think his analogy of comparing it to a, you know, a Peyton Manning type injury and recognizing what he needs to do to come back, and it, you know, certainly.
I agree. I think the guy gets back, and neck injury is always a dangerous injury, obviously. But again, you know, he seems very confident that he'll be back, and you know, you got to respect his confidence there. He seems like he's willing and to do what he has to do to get back and be successful again in the National Football League. Nothing but the best of luck again for Bo Scape going forward. We wish him nothing but the best of luck, and I hope he can get back. Hopefully, he can. I mean. Tough situation. It's got to be very tough.
Well, I mean, and you see that, but you're seeing too, and this is certainly, I think, the trend, I think, in the NFL with these neck injuries, and you know, you don't want to rush anything, and he's smart. I mean, he I think the clear comparison to Peyton Manning, and like you said, he wants to be there with the team, and certainly, you know, wants to potentially, you know, root them on. But as he said, he's got to focus on, you know, getting back. It's the neck, and it's a part of the body that you know you're going to need a lot more after football that you certainly need during the time. But it does get to a point, and I think that we're seeing with a lot of these athletes when these injuries, you know, occur, and he made it quite clear too that, you know, it's a business. So you don't come back from the injury 100% or even 120% with something to prove. You'll pay for that, and scouts will see it, and coaches will know it, and you'll probably wish that you spent a little bit extra time making sure that you know you're better off when you came back than you were when you started. And I, you know, as I said, kudos. I think it was healthy to see him say that he needs to focus on getting healthy.
And let's bring in now guard for the Philadelphia Eagles, Mr. Evan Mathis. Evan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. And, Evan, in the NFL, every game is a must-win. But last week against Washington, that had to be really a must-win. Talk about that.
Going into the game 1-4 against a division opponent, playing – around a bunch of guys who are very talented, have a ton of heart, and had just been shooting ourselves in the foot after week. We knew we needed to just put it all together, stop making the dumb mistakes, and finally get that W headed into the bye week.
And, Evan, the offensive line, you guys have been criticized throughout this season. A lot of injuries last week, but you guys did a great job against the Washington Redskins. Shady McCoy, over 100 yards rushing. Talk about the offensive line performance against the Redskins.
We had to move a few guys around with Jason Peters and King Dunlap at. You know, we had Todd Harriman shift from right tackle to left tackle, and Winston Justice coming in and play the right tackle spot. You know, we went into that game not having played together except for a couple days in practice, and I think it says a lot for all the guys out there who studied real hard in the film room, got the game plan and trusted it from the coaches, and then went out on Sunday, executed it just by playing hard and communicating with each other.
And has that criticism on the offensive line, has it bothered you at all?
No, not at all. I knew how good we were, how good we would be and how good we can be. I could see it during camp, and I know we have great guidance under Howard Mudd. So, I mean, the people saying that, it's just easy for them to say it because we haven't been around that long as a unit.
So, Evan, you think the best then of this offensive line is certainly to come in the next, you know, in the upcoming games here?
Do I think it's what?
You're starting to catch your groove as the whole offensive line, and you feel that this criticism will soon be answered?
It should be. I mean, we're making progress every week. 2-4 is not good. We don't like that at all. Once we get on a little run, keep progressing every week, which we try to do, then it should back off a little bit, but we're not motivated by it or burdened by it in any way.
And talk about with the off season and all that was made, especially in the national media of this dream team. Was there pressure inside the locker room from the national media and from all the player signings of a dream team?
I just think it set the bar real high for us. We had really high expectations from everybody, and I think it also, the only thing that really guaranteed us was a bullseye right on our forehead. So now we're 2-4. You can't really call us a dream team or anything like that because we've got to go out and prove ourselves every week.
We're talking to Evan Mathis, guard for the Philadelphia Eagles. And Evan, it's very obvious to me looking at this Eagle team that they believe in Andy Reid. This is your first year with the Eagles. How do you feel about Coach Reid?
Being around this league, this is my seventh year, and I've talked to many other players who have plenty of experience in this league and heard all kinds of stories, good and bad. Andy Reid is a very, very good coach. He's very well organized. He's a very professional guy. He knows what it takes to win. Those are really my first impressions of him in this first season I've been playing with him.
And now, right now, Evan, you guys are on the bye, but after this bye, you got a big three-game homestand coming up, starting next week against the Dallas Cowboys. This is a big homestand. If the Eagles want to make the playoffs, I think they have to win all three of these games. Is that kind of your mindset going into this homestand?
Absolutely. That's definitely the mindset that myself and all the guys are taking. We need to win these games, win these three games, and all of a sudden we're 5-4, and things are starting to roll our way. So, I mean, it's in our own hands right now. We just got to go out and make it happen.
And hopefully you guys can, starting next week against the Dallas Cowboys. And, Evan, I've been saying on this air for the past few weeks that the Philadelphia Eagles still will win the NFC East. There's just absolutely, positively too much talent on this roster for them not to win the NFC East. Evan, please don't let me down.
I'll work on it for you. We'll get it done.
Please, please. And, Evan, you're a guy that loves to correspond with the fans. How can fans connect with Evan Mathis?
Oh, you guys can find me on Twitter, at EvanMathis69. That's pretty much the best way. Sometimes I throw my email address up on the Twitter and have fans email me. I love the fan interaction because, I grew up a fan, and all I am really is a fan playing the sport now.
Right. And Evan, looking at it, you're on bye right now. How's Evan Mathis spending his bye week?
Right now I'm pulling into Tuscaloosa, Alabama, get ready to have some good barbecue here before the Alabama-Tennessee game, and I'm going to go to that game and watch that. It's been a while since I was able to catch an Alabama game.
So Roll Tide?
Roll Tide, baby.
Evan, we appreciate you taking time out for us, sir. Enjoy the game. Have a successful season. I am a lifelong Eagles fan. Jeremy is a lifelong Eagles fan. So please, please, get us to the playoffs. Please.
We'll do it for you. Thanks for having me again.
Thank you, Evan.
Later.
There you go. I mean,
Evan Mathis.
It doesn't get better than that, Paul. It's certainly coming on and helping us feel reassured that we'll be in the playoffs.
Definitely. I mean, a lot of people have been giving us some assurances that they're okay, and we'll see what happens. We'll definitely see what sees. I can't even talk. We'll definitely see what happens moving forward. Again, I have the Philadelphia Eagles. No matter what's going on, no matter what has happened, this team is too talented of a ball club not to win this division. It's just too talented. Too talented not to win this division. It's just impossible for them not to win. And, Evan, he's not worried about that right now. He's about to enjoy some great barbecue. And, I kind of wish I could join them as well. I mean, I like barbecue too. I like barbecue as well. I mean, barbecue is a good thing to me. I mean, it's tasty. It's delicious. It's scrumptious. I like barbecue. But Evan, he's going to be enjoying some barbecue and enjoying his Alabama Crimson Tide. Roll Tide rolled, as they like to say in Alabama. They love to say that in Alabama. I want to switch gears now to something that is depressing, something that makes me want to cry, and that is the NBA lockout. It's been going on 100-plus days. I forgot how many days it's been, but it's been going on for a while now. They had some mediation last week. No deal as of now. The NBA is out. I don't know how long they'll be out. I think they'll be out possibly until, I think, January. I think we're going to see a 50-game season like we saw many moons ago back in 1999. But this is just a depressing situation. I mean, my NBA, I mean, I enjoy NBA basketball. And, it's looking like we're going to miss some games.
Well,
we already missed the first 2 weeks of the season. We already missed the first 2 weeks of the season. It looks like we may be missing some more games, though. At this point, any more games have been canceled. I mean, the first 2 weeks have been canceled. That's it at this point. But you look at it, I mean, you figure, I mean, the NBA is not the NFL. I said this many times. The NBA is not the NFL. It's just not. It's not the NFL. So with all that being said, you have to get this thing done so you guys can get back on the field. You got to get it done. Not the field, the court, excuse me. You got to get that done.
Well, Well, but Paul, I mean, the bottom line is it's not getting done, so I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, it's going to be this week. If anything showed you that this week, how far apart these two sides are. I mean, they walked away. So.
Right. So I mean, I don't know what's going on in their heads. I mean, you got to work this out. You got to work this out. And speaking of this lockout, you had Bryant Gumbel, who had some interesting comments on his Real Sports show, which airs on HBO. And Bryant was quoted as saying, Gumbel was quoted as saying, and he said this on Real Sports, that Stern had always seemed eager to be viewed as some kind of modern plantation overseer, treating NBA men as if they were his boys. Let me repeat that. Bryant Gumbel, these are his quotes. David Stern had always seemed eager to be viewed as some kind of modern plantation overseer, treating NBA men as if they were his boys. And those were the words of Bryant Gumbel. And Bryant Gumbel, to me, has some interesting things to say. And Bryant Gumbel is a very good sports journalist. He is. But I don't necessarily agree with this. I don't agree with this. And the thing is, even, you know, if you agree with the point, the problem becomes is when you start using words like plantation and you start saying that David Stern views his NBA men as boys. I mean, when you start saying those type of things, the point that you're trying to make becomes null and void. Because I don't think people really want to listen to what you say. They only see the plantation. And when they see plantation, when you use words like plantation, Nazi, and all these type of words, you know when you make those type of comparisons, you know you're going to be in trouble. You know that whatever point you tried to make officially got lost. It gets lost. It just gets lost. It really does. It really gets lost. I don't agree with Gumbel with this, with his remarks. I really don't. I don't think David Stern, I don't think he's done that. I mean, I think if you're going to make that kind of comparison, maybe you could say Roger Goodell for the simple fact that, you know, guys are getting suspended a lot for some of the things they're doing off the field and things of that nature. I mean, if you're going to make that comparison, I think if you're going to make the comparison, I think the Goodell comparison is a better comparison to me. But even then, I still wouldn't make that comparison. The bottom line is when you talk plantation and million-dollar athletes, your point gets lost. And that's the bottom line. Your point gets lost.
Well,
whatever point that you had, it gets lost.
Well, it's also – but also, Paul, you know, I couldn't agree more, and I'm going to take it a step further. And I think when you say stuff like that, I think that it's also, you know, in the context in which you say it, where you say it, you know, to take the jabs at David Stern, I think to say that it's so simple. Just, you know, to say that, you know, and pretty much to make him out to be a racist, but then I think you have to support that as a journalist. That's his opinion, but opinions like that, I think, you know, unless you can warrant them, then they need to be, you know, held back and restrained, because all that does is put, I think, a black eye on a bad situation.
And yeah, I mean, it's just, I think I understand his point. I just don't know if I agree with it. And again, whatever point you make, when you start bringing plantation and start talking slavery and things of that nature, whatever point that you had to make, it gets lost. It's kind of like a person who yells and screams all the time. If you yell and scream all the time, people don't hear your points. They hear your yelling. And so whatever you're saying goes in one ear and out the other. And whatever effect that you wanted, you don't get. You don't get the effect that you wanted. And so that, to me, is the reality of that situation. But Bryant Gumbel, interesting comments. And the guy, to me, again, he's a very good journalist. And a very intelligent man, and That's a good show, Real Sports, by the way. I mean, that's a must see type of show. It's a very good show in my mind. I really enjoy watching Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, but I think these particular comments to me were off the mark. They definitely were off the mark. But we'll see what happens with this whole situation moving forward. But hopefully the NBA and its players get this thing together and get guys back on the court where they belong, not in some court in Europe and Turkey and things of that nature, and countries, although Europe is a continent, but not. I don't want to see guys in Turkey. I don't want to see Darren Williams in Turkey. I want to see him with his New Jersey Nets jersey on. That's what I want to see, and hopefully that can happen in the next few days or weeks for that matter. And last week, we talked about the big Bernard Hopkins, Chad Dawson fight, and we had Willie Rove talk about that fight as well, as he was there at Staples Center enjoying the fight. And the fight was initially ruled a TKO by Chad Dawson. I don't know how you get a TKO by slamming somebody on the ground. I don't know how that happens without throwing a punch. Last I checked, this is not MMA. So anyway, you look at it, the whole situation with Chad Dawson, Bernard Hopkins. Chad Dawson initially was named the champion, the WBC light heavyweight champion. But then again, he was named that, and the WBC giveth, and the WBC taketh away. And Bernard Hopkins quickly was restored as the champion by the WBC. But here's the thing with this. Though the WBC has given the belt back to Bernard Hopkins, California still needs to meet. They still need to have their hearing so they can come up with a decision of their own. So at this point, the record, Bernard Hopkins' record, still stands as a loss, and Chad Dawson still stands as the victor this time around. But we'll see what happens once California rules on this whole situation. I would be absolutely positively shocked if California does not overturn this decision. I mean, absolutely. Bernard Hopkins was thrown to the ground.
He got his title back, and I think that was the big piece, Paul. And it was unfortunate. I mean, Bernard wasn't fighting the greatest fight, and it certainly he could have lost that fight if it wasn't for that unfortunate accident.
Well, you look at it, the fight only went two rounds, so it's kind of hard for us to make a determination about that after two rounds. The fight was only two rounds at that point. So to me, I know I've heard people say, oh, Bernard was going to lose. Yes, I thought Chad Dawson was going to win the fight. But that small sample size that I got, I can't say that Chad Dawson was definitively going to win that fight. It was such a small sample size there. I can't make an opinion off of what I saw. I just can't. I mean, I know a lot of people are saying, yes, Dawson would have won the fight. And, Bernard chumped out and got scared and didn't want to fight and so on and so forth. But let's be clear about some things. The medical report on the night of the fight has been released from the California Medical Center in L.A., and the x-rays were examined by a doctor, and Bernard Hopkins essentially had a separated shoulder. So for those of you, Willie Rofe is one of them, for those of you who are saying the great Bernard Hopkins was faking and so on and so forth, let the record show, let the medical records show that Bernard Hopkins was diagnosed with a separation of his shoulder. So what else is there to say? He wasn't punched down. He was pushed down. He was thrown down. That was not a punch. It was a tackle. And last I checked, this is not mixed martial arts. This is not even football.
So what
I saw on that night was, I didn't buy the fight, by the way. What I saw from the pictures that night, it looked like Chad Dawson tackled Bernard Hopkins. I will watch the fight tonight. I did not want to drop $54 on that fight. I wanted to see it, but I wasn't willing to pay for it. I just could not do it. And you know what? Lo and behold, I think I made the right decision because I did not purchase this pay-per-view and will not purchase this pay-per-view moving forward if these two ever were to fight
the
again.
But the numbers show, Paul, no one purchased the pay-per-view. There was pretty much an empty Staples Center. It was they said I think less than 100,000 buys. Or it was phenomenally poor. And in fact, that I think I was reading one of Dan Rayfield, ESPN Dan Rayfield's article on his boxing column, that there will be no rematch. It financially didn't make any sense. And given the fact that the fight was, it came out this way, there's for the promoters, there's no financial reason to do this again.
And in terms of money, the reality is Chad Dawson doesn't bring very much to the table in terms of financially. He doesn't do it. Bernard Hopkins does. Not as much, not a lot, but he does bring something. He does bring something. But you look at it, Chad Dawson brings nothing to the table. He brings absolutely nothing to the table in terms of if you want to talk financially. He really doesn't. So you look at it, we'll see what happens with this fight moving forward. Let's bring in now pitcher for the Oakland A's, Mr. Craig Breslow. Craig, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
And Craig, you've seen these Texas Rangers firsthand. They came back in the ninth inning against the St. Louis Cardinals. They tied the series 1-1. How do you view this series going forward?
Well, you know, I didn't think that the series would start like this, so I'm not exactly sure what to do with my predictions. I think, like most guys, I predicted a Phillies-Yankees World Series. That went out the window a long time ago.
Don't remind me.
Next, I figured Texas and St. Louis would be involved in a shootout. I mean, you know, having faced that Texas lineup a number of times during the season and realizing how hard it is to control those bats, I mean, St. Louis has got some pretty good starting pitching, and obviously their bullpen has been throwing exceptionally well. But nonetheless, I mean, when you got guys like Nelson Cruz and Mike Napoli hitting, you know, sometimes as low as seventh or eighth in the lineup, guys that hit 30 home runs and, you know, driving 100 runs, I figured that Texas wasn't going to have too much of a problem putting runs on the board. But I mean, as we saw through the first two games, it's been a pitching matchup. I still think Texas is a better team. I think that ultimately they'll win the series. I just didn't envision it going this way.
And you look at the Cardinals, you can say that about the Phillies against the Cardinals, and I think, like you said, you can say it this time around with the Texas Rangers, but this team, they seem like Destiny's Child on some level.
Well, yeah, that's true. Obviously, coming into September, I think they were pretty close to 10 games back, I think, on September 1st.
Right.
And, you know, squeezed into the playoffs in what was probably the most dramatic and exciting last couple of days of the season that I can remember. And you're right, you know, sometimes winning the World Series, well, all the time winning the World Series isn't about being the best team, it's about being the best team, you know, in late September and October. We saw that with the Giants last year. And, I mean, if St. Louis does complete, you know, what's seemingly a magical run, you know, more credit to them. But I think if you were to play this series out, you know, 10 times, I think Texas wins it probably 7 or 8 of them.
Well, and that's an interesting point. I mean, it certainly seems like you believe that, you know, overall or on paper, the Rangers are the stronger team. But here you have a Cardinals team that arguably very easily knocked off the would-be world champion Philadelphia Phillies and has made mincemeat of many of their opponents. So, I mean, when you look at now the fact that both of these teams, I mean, have done a very good job of with their pitching staff, do you see the fact that the Rangers have not done much offensively as almost a plus for them?
Maybe. I think there are obviously with any game a number of factors at play. I don't know how much of the Rangers' bats going silent is. You know, a credit to St. Louis's pitching, you know, to the fact that they were so good for 162 games that at some point they had to slump. You know, this could just be natural variance that we're seeing right now. But I mean, you know, nonetheless, you have to give credit to the Cardinals. They're playing great baseball. They, you know, it seems like they're, you know, like you said, they're playing well together, and they also have a good understanding of what their responsibilities are. You know, you don't see guys that are trying to do too much. I mean, obviously, that middle of the lineup, you know, you got guys like Pujols in the middle of it. That's a pretty good building block to work a team around. But you know, their bullpen's been throwing exceptionally well, and La Russa's a genius. You know, I mean, there might not be a better playoff manager than Tony La Russa, and I think we've also seen that. I think you know that La Russa's been outmanaging other teams through this ride.
And Craig, let's move to you now. I mean, I know you get asked this all the time, but you recently was named by the Sporting News as the smartest man in baseball, and it's very fitting, being that you're a graduate of Yale with degrees in biophysics and biochemistry. How does it feel to be smart?
I don't know. You know, being smart is, or at least perceived as being smart, is as much about tricking people as it is about actual intelligence. I think, you know, if you speak pretty well, you say the right answer most of the time, and when you don't know it, you speak confidently and definitively anyway. Most people think you're really smart. The other thing I try to do is limit the number of these interviews I do for fear of overexposing myself.
And do you use chemistry and physics on the mound? And if you do, I would imagine that it could be kind of a gift and a curse on some level.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, school and science in particularly have always been things that have come pretty easy to me. And for a large part, I think that was advantageous. However, now, you know, being pretty comfortable in my delivery and having established myself around the league, sometimes, you know, an analytical mind can be my worst enemy.
Right.
You know, I'm a guy who's accustomed to having answers, and when something doesn't go my way or I can't figure something out, I've always been taught there's an answer out there. It's just a matter of finding it. And baseball and pitching in particular is a very, very tricky task. There isn't always an answer, and sometimes, you know, you make a pitch and it results in a bloop single, or you know, you make a terrible pitch and a guy swings through it, and it's seemingly inexplicable. You know, the matter of watching video and spending hours trying to recreate the pitch is sometimes the wrong approach, and often I find myself just trying to, you know, kind of dumb things down and simplify them and just go out there and do what I've done for, you know, now 30 years.
We're talking to Craig Breslow, pitcher for the Oakland A's. And Jeremy, go ahead.
That was an interesting point. You know, much is made in all major sports about, you know, watching the film, player tendencies, and really knowing your opponent. But I appreciate very much what you said about, you know, the quote-unquote dumbing it down or keeping it simple. I mean, is that because it's not very quote-unquote sexy to talk about, you know, in terms of a player or really – remembering what brought them and got them the talent really it was God-given and certainly their natural work ethic. But how important is it to keep in mind, you know, your fundamentals as the player and the athlete?
Yeah, I think it's I think it's incredibly important. And you know, I don't you know, downplay the importance of video, you know, of video and some of the resources that are available. And I think that there's certainly a time, you know, for that. But for me, I've noticed I'm best and I'm most likely to be successful when, you know, I'm not so much worried about, am I doing things the same way that I had been doing them in the past, you know, if things are working out. When I struggle, certainly that's a good time to go back to the video and just make sure that in a very general level, overall things look the same today as they did last month when I was throwing very well. But I think you can also get bogged down in, you know, and I, like I said, I try to convince myself to refrain from looking at, you know, where's my foot, where's my hand, where's my arm, where's my glove, where's my head. And you know, like you said, just focus on the fundamentals, you know, the big picture, the things that I've done seemingly, you know, mindlessly for so long. You know, there are a number of interesting studies about, you know, what's going on in an elite athlete's mind while they're performing at their peak. And most of the time, it's virtually nothing. So, you know, I think that's a pretty good reminder.
And Craig, let's look at your Oakland A's team right now. You were a team at the end of May, 3.5 games out of first place. but you went 9-17 in June, and after that you were pretty much out of contention. What happened to the A's in 2011?
You know, by and large, 2011 was a disappointment. You know, there were some heightened expectations coming into spring training based on the way we had finished last year, some of the offseason acquisitions that we made, and for a number of reasons, I think things didn't work out. Injuries were certainly one of them. I think in like a 3 or 4 day span, we lost 80% of our starting rotation. You know, there were a number of things that were pretty well documented that went on in the clubhouse. We had a new manager. You know, there's always kind of a transitional period that requires. And some guys that, you know, myself included, you know, didn't perform kind of commensurate with their career numbers. You know, we signed some guys that we thought were going to juice up the middle of our lineup, and in a large part, you know, they did. Guys like, you know, Josh Willingham had a great year, and Matsui for a month and a half stretch was the best hitter in baseball coming out of the All-Star break. But, you know, a guy like David DeJesus, who's an excellent player, will be the first one to tell you that his 2011 season was a disappointment. You know, a guy like Brian Fuentes, the same way. And so, you know, I think that if, you know, we can get guys back to kind of what their career averages are, and then, you know, there's that saying that, you know, you kind of play to the numbers on the back of your baseball card. I think we'll be in pretty good shape. I think we're all excited to be with Bob Melvin from day one of spring training and get used, you know, get his staff implemented and get used to the way he does things and have a full season with him.
And you look at it, Craig, 2009 and 2010, you were second among AL relievers with 75 appearances. Do you think that affected your 2011 at all?
That's something that I've considered, and, you know, I don't have a clear-cut answer. Relievers have a reputation for kind of being the most volatile position year to year, and some of the metrics that would indicate that I was tired are, you know, didn't really hold up true things like velocity, command. You know, I think my walks were down, my velocity was up. You know, all indications that I of not being tired but actually being healthy. You know, there's probably you know, an adjustment that you know, now that having that, considering I was out there 150 times over the previous 2 years, hitters have now seen me a lot more and kind of know my tendencies, and maybe I need to adjust and stay one step ahead of them. There was a time where I think my mechanics did get a little out of whack, and there was also you know, a time where I didn't pitch very frequently, and I've always been a guy who increases his success with more frequent trips to the mound.
And you use some big words there, certainly the matrix with comparing yourself. How do you make sure you get into 2011, and you also mentioned that now your opponent has seen a lot of you. So, I mean, are you playing in the offseason to change anything in terms of your routine, or are you looking to maybe add some things or even take some things away?
Well, aside from coming back throwing right-handed, I'm going to do everything exactly the same. I think that speaks to what we were talking about earlier, you know, and kind of keeping the fundamentals in mind. One thing that I would point to was, given the workload that I had in 2010, my 2010 going into 2011 offseason was slightly abbreviated. I started throwing a little bit later in the year to give my body a break. And then, you know, with the workload down a little bit this year, I can go back to a full off season, you know, do everything the way that I'm used to doing them and throw a little bit more. And I think, you know, I think, like I said, there are just some times where my mechanics got away from me a little bit. And you know, while I wasn't necessarily walking guys, you know, maybe I was falling behind and getting into some hitters counts. And I think if I focus on kind of honing the mechanics, getting myself strong, getting my arm in shape, then I think I think 2012 will be a bounce back season for me.
We're talking to A's pitcher Craig Breslow. And Craig, you were arbitration eligible last season with the A's, and you will be this season as well. But overall, do you think you will be back with the A's in 2012?
I think so. I've got no, you know, aside from the stray rumor that, you know, you pick up on the internet, I've got no indication that I wouldn't be back. You know, I like to think that I've established myself as a core member of the A's bullpen. You know, certainly proven that I'm healthy and a workhorse and get lefties and righties out pretty equally. And I definitely think that it's a good fit for me. you know, I think it's an exciting time to be part of the organization because I'm kind of able to watch the maturity of some of our starters, you know, guys like Trevor Cahill and Gio Gonzalez and Brett Anderson. And now, you know, hopefully there's a crop of position players that are kind of meeting up with them. The guys like, you know, Michael Taylors and Chris Carters and Brandon Allens and even that next wave of Grant Green and Michael Choice. And it's an organization I'd like to be a part of, and I'd like to help win.
And Craig, not only do you have a beautiful mind, but you have a beautiful left hand as well. You did a spoof on the whole Rex Ryan foot fetish thing for your charity, the Strike 3 Foundation. How much fun was that for you?
It was a little bit awkward. It was kind of the most uncomfortable I felt in front of a camera in a long time. But it was also a lot of fun. Got a lot of great feedback. And again, you know, for an important cause, which was raising funding for pediatric cancer research through my Strike 3 Foundation.
And let's talk about the Strike 3 Foundation. What was the inspiration behind it?
So the impetus for the Strike 3 Foundation was my older sister, Leslie, who when she was 13 and I was 11, she was diagnosed with pediatric thyroid cancer and has since survived and beaten the disease. But it remained with me for a long time, and actually I thought that at this point in my life I'd be a physician as opposed to a professional baseball player. But the work that we do has allowed me to remain connected to the medical field. And most importantly, you know, this was an opportunity to celebrate the importance of funding and to celebrate a success story as opposed to a tragedy.
And this is obviously truly a labor of love for you.
Absolutely. When I undertook this endeavor back in 2008, I didn't quite have a grasp for how much time it would require and how consuming it could be. But there is definitely nothing more gratifying. I mean, not even a pitch that I could make that's as gratifying as, you know, being able to present a check to a treatment or research institution and visit the kids and see the difference that we're making.
You have any big events coming up?
We do. Our signature fundraiser is the First Pitch Celebrity Gala, and that's scheduled for November 19th at the Stanford Hilton in Stanford, Connecticut. It's hosted by Bobby Valentine and Carl Ravitch, and we get a number of celebrities and players. Last year we had about 500 guests, and we raised $250,000 through, you know, ticket sales and a really great silent auction with some really unique sporting opportunities. And we always have a surprise musical entertainer, so I can't disclose who that would be. But in the past, it's Shaggy was there in 2009 and 2010. Sister Hazel performed.
Could it be me?
It could be, although I will say it's not.
Good. Thank you.
Let me give you a sample size. Let me give you a little sample size. You judge.
Okay.
Say McNabb, everybody. Say McNabb, everybody. He is the guy if the Eagles want to fly.
I can't give you no more. I can't give you. You got to pay for the rest.
Right, right. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it's not as good as I thought it was going to be either.
Okay, well, there goes my singing career. And where can we go to find information about this foundation?
So the website is comprehensive, has a ton of information. That's www.strike3foundation.org, just the number 3.
Okay, everybody, please, please go to strike3foundation.org, and that's the number 3. Support all the things that Craig Breslow is doing for cancer. I mean, you're doing a great job with this, Craig, and much respect to you.
Thank you. Thanks. I certainly appreciate that.
Craig, we appreciate you stopping by, sir. We wish you nothing but the best of luck going into the 2012 season, and let's do this again.
All right. Thanks. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care, guys.
Craig Breslow, pitcher, Oakland A's. And I thought for one second that I possibly could be the singer for the Foundation Gala, the Strike 3 Foundation Gala, but maybe next time. Maybe next time. I tried. You know, that's all you can do. You have the guy on the line, and you go for the opportunity. I mean, he's got to pay for the rest, though.
Oh my God, Paul! Please, this is a charity, a children's show. I mean,
I want to thank Willie Rowe for stopping by. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Willie Rofe. Make sure you follow Mary. Great analyst. Gave us some great stuff this week. I also want to thank Gerald Sensiball. Make sure you go to gsensiball.com. Check out some of the great things that he's doing in the community and the great things he's doing in terms of giveaways. He's got a lot of giveaways going on. Also, I want to thank Evan Mathis of the Philadelphia Eagles. Make sure you go follow him on Twitter, EvanMathis69. Follow him there on Twitter. Follow him, follow him, follow him. I want to thank also Bo Scaife for stopping by. He doesn't have a Twitter, but just look out for him. As he said, look out for him and look out for him. And also, lastly, I want to thank Craig Breslow, pitcher from the Oakland A's, for stopping by. Follow him on Twitter at Craig Breslow. And also go to his foundation website, strike3foundation.org, and that's the number 3. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan, where you can listen to this great show and other great shows. Also, please follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGan. Follow me, follow me, follow me. Again, we want to thank everybody who listened, everybody who came on. A great show today. For Jeremy Espy, this is Paul Gant. See you later. Have a great day. Take care. Bye.